Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 141 for April 20th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
My aim is eventually that all my whiskies, the single malts, will all be non-chill filtered, which means that we'll bottle them all at American strength of 92. Minimum 92, which means that we don't need to chill filter. It'll be a more natural product, and we will have more of the natural flavors staying in them.
That's Ian McMillan, the jack of all trades at Byrne Stewart Distillers. He's master distiller for three separate distilleries and the master blender, too. More with Ian later, but first, let's look at the news. And when I left Lexington, Kentucky last weekend after spending a few days with the guys at Maker's Mark, I had no idea what was coming on Monday morning. After 14 years, master distiller Dave Pickerell left Maker's Mark that day. Kevin Smith, who led our tour of the distillery in the last episode, moves up to replace Dave as master distiller and vice president of operations. On the business side, Rob Samuels becomes director of global brand development, and Jen Meyer joins the distillery as senior brand manager responsible for U.S. marketing. As I said, there were no indications that this was coming, and Dave hasn't said what he's going to do next. The winners of this year's World Whiskey Awards were announced at this week's World Whiskies Conference in Glasgow, and for the first time, Japanese whiskies took the top honors for Best Single Malt and Best Blended Whiskies. Yoichi 20-year-old was named Best Single Malt, and Suntory's Hibiki 30 was named Best Blended Whiskey. Glenrothes 25-year-old was honored as the Best New Release of the Year. Barry Brothers and Rudd's 30-year-old Blue Hanger was named Best Blended Malt Whiskey. And Compass Box Hedonism, the Best Grain Whiskey. George T. Stagg Bourbon was named Best American Whiskey. And Wild Turkey's American Honey, the Best Whiskey Liqueur. The awards are run by Whiskey Magazine. I've mentioned the upcoming release of Highland Park's first distillery bottling of a 40-year-old single malt. And the official announcement came from Orkney this past week. It's here. It's been aged for the most part in refilled bourbon casks, which Highland Park claims are better for long-term aging because the impact of the wood is more muted over time. The 40-year-old will be bottled at 48.3% ABV and will be sold for a whopping £900 or $1,800 a bottle. There's a new line of Scotch malt whiskies hitting the U.S. market. Weems Vintage Malts is releasing 2 8-year-old blended malts, the Smooth Gentleman and the Spice King. The Weems family is based in Fife, Scotland, and grows barley on its estate for many of Scotland's distilleries. The family is working off the idea that the name of a whiskey should give a consumer an idea of what it'll taste like. And the casks for these whiskies were selected by veteran whiskey writer and malt maniac Charles McLean. A third version, the Peat Chimney, will be released later this year. You can guess what that one's going to taste like. Castle Brands is celebrating its 10th anniversary with two special releases of its Napog Castle Irish Single Malt. The Andrews family built the brand on the reputation of Napog Castle 1951, which was distilled at the B. Daly Distillery in Tullamore and aged for 36 years in sherry casks. Now, Castle will release 60 bottles of what remains from the 1951 vintage to celebrate the anniversary, along with a limited number of Castle Collection cases, with a bottle of each of the Napog Castle vintages from 1990 through 1995. You'll find a link for more details at the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society will open its doors to non-members on Friday in Liverpool for a special dinner and tasting. This coming weekend is also the Whiskey Fair in Limburg, Germany, the West Coast Whiskey Association exhibition in Trollhättan, Sweden, and Whiskey Live in Strasbourg, France. The Spirit of Speyside Festival runs May 1st through the 5th. The New York Academy of Sciences will present a special seminar on the science of Scotch on May 6th in New York City. And the Spirit of Toronto Festival is May 10th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. And it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay at Laphroaig.com. It's hard enough serving as master distiller at one distillery, let alone three, and serving as master blender at the same time. Ian McMillan juggles all these jobs for Bern Stewart Distillers. He's responsible for Deanston, Tobermory, and Boonehaven distilleries, and the classic black bottle blend. I caught up with Ian during a recent stop at Garnett Liquors in New York City.
Give me a sense of what you've done at Boonehaven especially, because that's the one that has sort of been relaunched over the last 5 years, and it's really seen by a lot of people as the most underrated of the Islay whiskeys. What have you been doing to try to change that?
Well, I mean, when we took on Boonehaven in 2003, it was really a very neglected distillery, and the previous owners had really only spent money where it was absolutely necessary to do so. And at the time, there was only one expression of Boonehaven available, was a 12-year-old. You know, when people used to say, you know, what happens to Boonehaven when it gets older? Does there something go wrong with it? The true fact of the matter is that Boonehaven is one of the best aging whiskies you'll ever come across. And the style of it on Islay, being potentially the largest distillery, it certainly has the largest stills on Islay, but it has this sort of gentle taste because all the malted barley is unpeated, so totally different to the style that people become aware of on Islay, of this heavy smoky style. But historically, I mean, Boonehaven would have made very peaty whiskies right up until the early 1960s, when at that time they had their own malting floor kilns and made their own malted barley there. And the distillates from those days would have been a peatier style. In fact, I recreated this style in 2003 by putting in additional vessels, and we now make a heavy peated style of Boonehaven whiskey. Primarily, I was aiming to use it in black bottle style for the blend, but such is the quality of it that we're actually looking at it now as a young whiskey, that in the future it could be bottled in its own right.
And you've expanded the range also to the 18 and the 21.
We did. We looked at what was available in our stocks, and the 18-year-old has certainly been a success in the way that a lot of whiskies that came into our ownership were of the would have been filled into sherry casks, and so we looked at the range extension we wanted to do, and ideally we wanted to bring an 18 and a 25-year-old. So the 25-year-old is the casks that were chosen for that had been matured very near the sea. So there's more of a salty influence there, but there wasn't a lot of sherry influence on that. The 18-year-old is more sherry influence, so two different styles from the one distillery and that range extension.
And Boonehaven really has had to be one of the more flexible distilleries on Islay because of the production of black bottle, right?
Yeah, I mean, through the years, whereas black bottle was one of the most pushed blends in Scotland for a long time, when it came under the ownership of the same company that had the famous Grouse, they tended to take their eye off of the black bottle and push the famous Grouse more. And but for future developments, I mean, of black bottle, where the 10-year-old is a consistent medal winner, is a style of whiskey that is totally unusual to any blend, and you would challenge any blend to be like that. It's the most robust deluxe blend you'll ever come across, with the malt content being 100% from the Islay distilleries.
Let's turn to Deanston now, because you've made some changes there as well. What's been done at Deanston over the last few years?
Well, at the moment, Deanston's actually going through a major refit at this time. We've actually not been distilling there for the last 3 months. We've put in two new stills, refurbished our mash tun, and doing a lot of civil work on the plant. It restarts production next week, actually, and from then it will be working 100% flat out until the end of the year. Such as the demand for Deanston for blending whiskey with other companies, we also have a huge need for it ourselves, because Deanston plays a part in virtually every Bern Stewart blend that we do, including black bottle. We've also fitted up 2 years ago a corporate hospitality suite that we entertain many of our customers in at Deanston as well, because Deanston is so centrally located and we also have the accreditation of being an organic distillery at Deanston. In fact, Deanston would probably be one of the greenest distilleries you could come across, because we actually generate all our own power there with water turbines. So with this organic certification and this generation of our own electricity, it makes Deanston very green.
And I understand some changes are coming at Tobermory, especially at least as far as the single malt is concerned. But what's happened at the distillery over the last few years, and then what's happening with the whiskey?
Well, at Tobermory, we actually reintroduced a maturation warehouse, which has not been there for many years. When we first bought Tobermory in 1993, the previous owner had been a private individual who had actually sold off the warehousing for housing. So we didn't have maturation. In fact, all the whiskies from Tobermory were all matured on the mainland. But the Ladaig style that we make at Tobermory for the last 5 years has been maturing on Isla at Bunahavon, so we're retaining this sort of traditional style. Tobermory is going through a repackaging, where we're going to be introducing a 15-year-old onto the market, which has been actually finishing off its maturation back on the island again, which is creating a lovely style of Tobermory. The Ladaig 10-year-old has been out now for a year or so now, and it is proving to be a fantastic whisky and winning many, many accolades and awards.
And for those who are not aware, both are distilled at Tobermory. What's the difference between them?
Both are distilled at Tobermory. The Tobermory is made from unpeated malted barley. The Ladaig is made from 100% peat-dried malted barley from Isla. In fact, it's the same heavy peated malt that would go into the likes of Laphroaig or Lagavulin. So it's the same style, although the whisky that we make at Ladaig style is quite different.
What's the future hold for these three distilleries?
The future is very, very bright for them all. I mean, we're coming round. In fact, Deanston has been repackaged as well. My aim is eventually that all my whiskies, the single malts, will all be non-chill filtered, which means that we'll bottle them all at American strength of 92, minimum 92, which means that we don't need to chill filter. It'll be a more natural product, and we will have more of the natural flavours staying in them. The future is very bright for them all. There's a huge demand for Deanston for blending and for the single malt styles and the other liqueurs that we make from Deanston. Tobermory and the Ladaig, I mean, when I first started making Ladaig at Tobermory, it was only 20% of the production. It's now between 50 and 60%. We actually get more demand to make Ladaig than we do Tobermory, but the distillery runs close to capacity all the time. We continually invest at Bunahavon, and at the moment we're converting one of the old malt barns that used to be there where the maltings plant was into an additional bonded warehouse. We need additional capacity, and we continue to invest in the three plants.
What's the oldest barrel of Bunahavon that you have in the warehouse that could come out theoretically?
I actually looked at some whiskey very, very recently, because we were looking at, because every year you have the what we call Fezeel, which is the Isla Festival of Whiskey and Music, and every distillery puts out a limited edition bottling. And I was looking at what to bring out this year, and I was looking at some, it was actually 39-year-old Bunahavon. But in fact, the whiskies, when I tasted them, were excellent, but they had gone under strength. So we can't bottle them. So we're actually bringing a 21-year-old this year for the... but the oldest whiskey we have there will be around about 40 years old at Bunahavon. The oldest we'll have of Deanston will be about 35, and the oldest Ladaig Tobermory will be 1972 distillate, so 36 years old.
So there's potential for some surprises down the line.
Oh, I've got some nice experiments on go at the moment. We've got some limited editions going into different parts of Europe. We're introducing a Manzanilla finish Bunahavon into Europe, which is a limited edition, and I have plans in 2011 where I have some spectacular Bunnahabhain maturing in sherry casks, which will be launched in 2011 as a 40-year-old, and the quality of that is absolutely magnificent.
This is the fun part, is sort of experimenting, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, they don't all work. I mean, we had some great success with a port finish, which we did with Ledaig a few years ago. So much was the success that we only launched it over in the States here, and it totally sold out in no time. I was very, very fortunate yesterday to be in a restaurant last night where they still had about half a bottle left of the Ledaig port, so we all had a large glass of that last night. It was nice to reacquaint myself because we've got nothing left of it,
and removed it from the stock list immediately.
Right, it's all gone now.
How much fun is this job?
Oh, it's great. I mean, for myself to have spent, you know, this is my 36th year in this trade, and I love it. It's one of those things that you learn something different every day. I mean, it's not like a boring sort of office job. You know, when you're out and about, I mean, my job covers the running of the distilleries, the maintaining consistency of the quality of the spirit, and also the blending of all the whiskies. So I have to, you know, some people will find it hard, but I have to taste many, many whiskies on a daily basis when I'm back in Scotland tonight, you know. So I can only be away for a week or so, coming over and doing some educational talks when I'm over here in the States. But it's great to come over here and meet people and feel the enthusiasm that people have for single malts, in particular our single malts, and to have talks with them. I enjoy that part of my job as well, conversing with the consumers.
Now, it's unusual for one person to do both the master distiller's job and do the master blending job as well, because they're both so specialized. How hard is it for you to do the two roles and keep them separate, especially when you've got some emotion invested in both sides of it, the stuff that you're making in your stills and what you've got coming out in the whiskies at the final end? How hard is it to balance the two roles?
The main thing is that is you've got to have a really good team. That's the thing. I mean, I have very good managers at each of the actual distilleries and at the vatting and blending plant that we have. It's important that these guys know exactly the way that I operate, the way that I want things done, and they make sure that's carried out. I also have an assistant blender to me who works with me, and she's a lady, and she's very, very good at her job as well. So these things are very important, is to have the right team, which means if I've got confidence in the team that work with me, then I can handle the two tasks simultaneously.
How did you get started in the business? You come by it naturally, or did you just pick this from university?
No, I was brought up very near a distillery, which is quite well known as Glengoyne, and my whole career started in Glengoyne in 1972. So now I'm in my 36th year in the Scotch whisky industry.
So what's the whole CV from Glengoyne in 72 on to where?
Well, Glengoyne, and then I moved to work for the DCL, as they were in those days. I moved to the Portland Ass Grain Distillery, and then they transferred me down to London to make a neutral spirit and then eventually make gin. I returned from London after 6 years in London to work in Glenturret Distillery in Crieff, and then from there I joined Burn Stewart in 1991, just as they had taken over Deanston Distillery. And from that, growing with Burn Stewart, with the acquisition of Tobermory in 1993 and then Bunnahabhain in 2003. So now I have the three distilleries under my running as well now.
Finally, I want to correct an error from the last episode. I said that Pappy Van Winkle had done his work with weeded bourbons at the Stitzel Weller Distillery in Frankfurt. Well, Stitzel Weller is actually in Louisville, and while the distillery in Frankfurt has had many names over the years, it's now known as Buffalo Trace. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. And you'll find links for this episode, the calendar of events, the Whiskey Cast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the Whiskey Cast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie. reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.